you do not have any time, like not a single second.
Right, which is wild to think about.
It really is. I mean, it is the biggest lie we tell ourselves, that time is just this thing we have sitting in some invisible bank account.
Just waiting for us to figure out what to do with it.
Exactly. So today we're exploring why you need to stop trying to, you know, save time and start spending it like the ruthless finite capital it actually is. Welcome to the deep dive.
We have got a really fascinating one today. We are looking at a philosophy from chapter 16 of Jack Spirko's book, Laws of Life.
Yeah, the chapter is called Make the Most of Your Dash.
The dash being that tiny, seemingly insignificant line carved on a tombstone.
Between the date you were born and the date you die.
Right. It is the ultimate distillation of human existence. A few inches of carved stone that has to carry the weight of your entire life.
Every laugh, every failure, every Tuesday morning commute.
All of it. And the central question here is whether you are truly making the most of that dash or just finding a way to stay comfortable.
And to grasp why that distinction matters, we have to look at where this philosophy started, because it was not in a boardroom or a classroom.
No, it started on a military base in Honduras.
Okay, take us there.
So the author was just 19 years old at the time, a young soldier in the 228th Aviation Regiment.
Just a kid, really?
Completely. And he is standing in formation for a change of command ceremony. The outgoing captain, a highly respected officer, steps up to give his final speech.
And I'm guessing he doesn't just give the standard military platitudes.
Not at all. He looks out at these soldiers and tells them that someday, every single one of them will die. Their name will be on a stone, under it will be two dates, and between them, a dash.
Wow.
Yeah. He reminds them that they are drilled relentlessly to never fail a mission. But their ultimate mission in life, the one they absolutely cannot afford to fail, is to make the most of that dash.
That is a staggering piece of perspective for a teenager to absorb.
It really is. And the text notes how that concept just echoed in the author's mind for decades. Fast forward to when he is in his mid-30s.
He has left the military by this point, right?
And become what he calls a corporate mercenary.
Which is such a vivid way to describe that path.
It perfectly captures it.
Yeah.
His whole operating system was finding a business opportunity, exploiting it to the maximum, wearing it out, cashing in, and moving on.
And he was successful, making a lot of money, providing for his family.
But the memory of that captain's speech comes creeping back. He realizes if his dash ended right then, his legacy would just be he was a hardworking man who loved his family.
And made a lot of money. Which, wait, let's unpack this for a second.
Okay, go for it.
Because I can hear someone listening right now, maybe in their 20s, grinding away, thinking, wait, is providing for my family a waste of my dash?
Oh, right.
I just do not buy that the corporate grind or early career hustle is inherently a failure. It feels more like gathering raw material.
Like chopping down trees before you build the house.
Exactly. You have to do the unglamorous work first.
And the text totally backs you up on that. The author actually advocates for that early hustle. He calls it grinding to find.
Grinding to find. I like that.
Yeah. When you are young or starting over, leaning into the grind is structurally necessary. He talks about his own struggles, like working grueling, low-paying temp jobs in Texas just to survive.
And he also points to his time at Fluke Networks, right?
Yes. He credits that intense corporate environment with giving him a real-world business education. He was leveling up his income, but more importantly, stockpiling skills.
Building a reputation, making connections. So the grind itself is not the enemy.
Not at all. The danger is what he calls purpose paralysis.
Getting stuck.
Exactly. The danger is staying in that mercenary grind long after it stops serving your true path.
Mm-hmm.
You stay because the money is good and the routine is comfortable.
You become a captive to your own competence.
Well said. You have to step off the grindstone when it's time to actually walk your path. Because staying too long is a recipe for a wasted life.
Which brings us to a really fascinating takedown of how society misunderstands regret.
Yes. There is this cliche that gets repeated constantly. No one on their deathbed ever wishes they worked harder.
It sounds so enlightened, as if the ultimate goal of life is just to relax.
It is a very convenient excuse to take your foot off the gas. But the author shatters that cliche with a thought experiment about a hypothetical guy named Bill.
Poor Bill.
Yeah, Bill is the embodiment of half measures. He half-asses every job he ever holds. He manages to get by, gets married, has kids.
But because he constantly job hops just out of necessity, his options slowly dry up.
The compounding nature of mediocrity. He hits his 40s with a terrible reputation, so he can only get miserable, low-level jobs.
The financial strain breaks his marriage. Divorce follows.
And he spends the next 15 years working soul-crushing shifts just to scrape together child support. He ends up in government housing, self-medicating, and dies at 71, totally broke and lonely.
And the piercing question here is, can you honestly look at Bill's life and claim he didn't regret not working harder?
The answer is obvious.
Of course he regretted it. Because work isn't just a 9-to-5 job. Parenting is work. Relationships are work.
Cultivating a presence in your community is work.
Right. If you phone it in across all those domains for a lifetime, regret is guaranteed.
Which leads the text to detail two distinct ways people fail to live up to their dash. The first failure maps directly to Bill.
Going through the motions.
Right. Living strictly for the weekends, dreading Monday morning, leaving zero impact. It is a profound hollowness.
The second failure, the author suggests this one might actually be worse.
It is the failure of achieving massive success.
Massive success on the wrong mountain.
Precisely. This is the person who does the grueling work, buys the big house, gets the awards, but late in life, a crushing realization sets in.
They spent their entire dash chasing someone else's definition of success.
They optimize their life for an external scorecard. High achievers fall into this trap constantly because of the dopamine hit of validation.
Like getting an A on a test. They ace society's test, but they never stop to ask if they even care about the subject.
And what is fascinating here is that the tragedy extends beyond the individual. It is a profound loss to the world because their unique genius was just buried under societal expectations.
So to avoid chasing the wrong success, you have to know who you genuinely are.
And the framework the author provides for this is wild.
Mm-mm.
He argues that your dash is not just the person you are today. It encompasses every version of you that has ever existed.
The timeline of the self. There is a defining story he shares about this. He is 14 years old, out hunting, and he shoots his first buck.
With a rifle, yeah.
Right. And immediately after the shot, his uncle turns to his dad and says, "That was the kid, and the kid don't miss."
And the significance wasn't just the praise. It was the fact that the 14-year-old boy internalized it as absolute truth.
He adopted it as his core identity. Give me any reasonable shot and I will not miss. It is that pure, irrational confidence of youth.
Yeah.
I compare it to my 12-year-old son playing basketball, casually declaring he could beat Michael Jordan.
Notice that you didn't correct his delusion, right? The text argues that making the most of your dash requires actively synthesizing these different selves.
Blending the fearless kid who has no concept of limitations with the wisdom of the mature adult.
Exactly. Because if you only let the adult drive, you become paralyzed by caution. You see risk everywhere.
But if you only let the kid drive, you are reckless. I mean, I cannot approach my mortgage with the mindset of a 14-year-old.
No, things would end disastrously. So the practical mechanism is to hold a mental board meeting with your timeline. You ask, would 14-year-old me look at this choice and call me a coward for not taking the leap?
That was an incredibly confronting filter.
It forces total honesty.
Yeah.
But you balance it by asking, would 45-year-old me warn me that I am ignoring past hard lessons?
You are aiming the fire of youth through the lens of maturity. I love that. But practically, how do we execute this daily?
Well, this brings us back to the lie we discussed at the start, the idea that we have time.
You do not have it. You spend it. Every single hour is a unit of currency, and you are actively exchanging it for whatever is in front of you.
And the market for that currency is ruthless. To help force this perspective shift, the author lays out a specific ledger system, the SPEND formula, S-P-E-N-D.
This formula is the tactical engine of the whole philosophy. The S stands for spend, but on the right target.
Right, because time is not a neutral force. If you aren't explicitly commanding where it goes, it naturally flows to the path of least resistance.
Comfort or mindless distraction?
Exactly, which flows directly into the P, priorities. The rule here is priorities must be proven through allocation.
Calendars tell the truth faster than words ever will. That is such a harsh reality check.
It really is. You can say your health is a priority, but if we look at the raw data of your calendar and it's not scheduled,
it is not a priority. It is just a pleasant wish.
And wishes do not alter a dash. So if the calendar dictates where time goes, the E dictates how it is used. E stands for effort.
Committing enough force. The author warns against the trap of light effort.
Because half measures just create ambiguity. Say you start a side hustle, but only give it 20% of your energy. When it fizzles out, what did you actually learn?
Nothing. You don't know if the market was wrong or if you just starved the project of oxygen?
You robbed yourself of actionable data. You have to hit the target hard enough to see if it breaks or bounces back.
Okay, so if effort is the gas pedal, the N is the brake. N stands for no drift.
Setting kill dates. Inertia is so dangerous. You pour time into a failing project simply because of the sunk cost fallacy.
A kill date is a deliberate line in the sand. You agree in advance, if this path isn't earning its cost and growth by this date, I am mercilessly cutting it off.
It preserves your remaining currency. And finally, we reach the D direction.
You must constantly validate your trajectory, because efficiency is completely meaningless if it is applied to the wrong vector.
Right. You can be moving at light speed, but if those tasks pull you away from who you intend to become, the speed is actually working against you.
So, S-P-E-N-D. Spend on targets, priorities proven, effort with force, no drift, and direction validated.
It is an airtight framework. But there is a terrifying catch.
Oh, there always is.
To execute this, you have to become your own mentor.
Your own telepathic boss, which is just a horrifying prospect for most of us.
Because you can never bullshit them. If a traditional boss asks why a project is delayed, you can spin a narrative. Blame an email emergency.
But the mentor in your head knows every time you chose the couch over the gym. They see the exact moment you rationalized your own retreat.
The text forces a very quiet, uncomfortable realization. Many people avoid long-term thinking because what they are actually avoiding is the burden of their own leadership.
Wow. When the standards are set entirely by you, there is no one left to blame.
You either rise to meet them or you half-ass them and end up like Bill.
Synthesizing all of this brings us to the true weight of making the most of your dash. The word most is not a synonym for exhaustion.
It doesn't mean sleeping 4 hours a night until your nervous system collapses.
It is a standard of absolute alignment, identifying the right targets and pursuing them with unyielding intent.
To ensure this actually sticks, the author provides 3 specific lines of code to program into your mental operating system.
Yeah, these are designed to trigger the moment your discipline starts to slip. Number one, when I hesitate or rationalize, consult past me and future me.
Number two, time is the most valuable currency I will ever spend. Help me spend it wisely.
And number three, when I try to justify comfort or delay, remind me that my dash is finite.
Those 3 directives, if genuinely applied, rewrite the trajectory of life.
They shift you from a passive consumer of time to an active investor of it.
Absolutely.
So to close out this deep dive, I want to leave you with a thought exercise. Think of a historical figure or an innovator you deeply admire. Someone whose dash fundamentally changed the world.
Look at the decisions they had to make, the kill dates they enforced.
And the sheer force of effort they applied. Now compare that to the choices you made over the last 7 days. Are you operating with the kind of force that carves a meaningful dash?
Or are you just hoping an extraordinary life will happen by accident?
Look at your calendar for the upcoming week. If a stranger saw it, what would they assume your life's true mission is? Does that match the dash you actually want to leave behind?
That is a question worth sitting with.
The dash is waiting. Stop treating your time like loose change. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and go make the most of it.